Consumer prices were up in March. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams, in for David Brancaccio. He's on assignment. The Department of Labor said this morning that consumer prices increased the most in more than a year. The prices of gas and food pushed the index up 0.4% in March. Year over year, CPI, a common measure of inflation, is up 1.9%. Strip out the volatile food and energy numbers, and inflation is at 2%, right at the Federal Reserve target. For more on this, I'm joined now by Susan Schmidt, head of U.S. equities for Aviva Investors. Good morning.
Good morning.
What do you think of these latest CPI numbers?
Well, the CPI numbers on the surface seem to be in line with expectations, but the core CPI number actually came in a bit below expectations. A lot of this is expected to be driven by a change in the way data was collected. And in this particular instance, it's how apparel prices were measured. And so I think economists are going to look through the number and anticipate that that slight difference is just due to the data collection change.
And we've got some important earnings coming up too, right?
This Friday, we'll launch into earnings season. We've seen some companies come out with pre-announcements, but just a handful. By a week from today, we will have heard from most of the major banks. They're looking to the key commentary from the banks to have a better sense of what's happening on the underlying economy, how the business customers are feeling. That's all very critical to taking inference away from that and figuring out how strong the market wants to feel, how convinced the market feels about the strength of the economy.
Susan Schmidt, head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors, thank you.
Thank you.
And the CEOs of America's biggest banks are on Capitol Hill today, testifying at this moment in front of the House Financial Services Committee. They're talking about the health of their industry since the financial crisis. With tax day approaching, most Americans will turn to third-party software or accountants to file their tax returns for them. That's even though the IRS offers free software made by the same private tax preparation companies. And the House of Representatives voted yesterday to stick with this free system that few people use. Marketplace's Ben Bradford reports.
Since the launch of the IRS's free file program in 2002, private companies such as H&R Block and Intuit, the maker of TurboTax, have provided the software for it. Mandy Matlock with the National Consumer Law Center says that's an inherent conflict of interest.
Nobody markets it. It's not easy to access. People who use it don't return to it.
70% of tax filers are technically eligible to use the free software, but UC Davis tax law professor Dennis Venturi says, in practice, well, take last year.
2.5 million returns used free file, which was a woeful 1.6% of all federal returns.
In a statement, the industry-run Free File Alliance says companies have made the software more user-friendly this year, and usage is up 6%. Even though the industry provides the software for free, it's also spent millions of dollars lobbying Congress to retain it. That's because, under the free file agreement, the IRS can't create its own free tax filing software. The legislation still must pass the Senate. I'm Ben Bradford for Marketplace.
Kids aging out of America's foster care system face a lot of extra challenges. 18 years old, entering the workforce, or if they're lucky, going to college without necessarily having the types of support other teenagers might have. According to the National Foster Youth Institute, 20% of children who age out of foster care instantly become homeless. And for many, there's another challenge: getting a hold of their identifying documents. The Texas Standard's Joy Diaz reports on why some American foster kids end up being undocumented.
In Texas, when kids in foster care turn 16, the law requires they get birth certificates, social security cards, and state IDs. But that's not what happened to Tim Belseth.
When I talked to my caseworker about getting these things, I was told that that they would get it, and they never did get it.
The same for Amber Meyer, now in her late 20s. She aged out of foster care without her vital records. She still doesn't have her documents.
In order to get Social Security card, you have to have an ID. In order to get a birth certificate, you have to have an ID, but you can't get an ID without a birth certificate.
Getting identifying documents for kids in foster care is difficult. Their biological family dynamics are sometimes complicated, and parents can be out of reach. Another challenge? One state is not always obligated to share its records with another. Attorney Mary Christine Reed works with people who have aged out of foster care and are seeking their documents. Often, Her first challenge is figuring out a person's name.
We've had clients where the name on their birth certificate does not match what they think their name is.
In a statement, the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services said, though it's required to provide children with these documents, it does not keep statistics on how many actually received them. It's planning to do so in the future. For the last 10 years, Amber Meyer says she's been unable to work or even rent a place legally. Tim Belseth eventually got his documents and a master's degree. He's now a researcher at the University of Texas in the School of Social Work. He says the system needs to do more to procure these documents.
There needs to be a sense of urgency. There absolutely does.
The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services estimates there are more than 400,000 kids nationwide in foster care on any given day. In Austin, I'm Joy Diaz for Marketplace.
And in Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.